All right, thanks, Yeba. And it's a pleasure to be here to talk about some of our work. We're not going to talk about wetlands or bioreactors for just a little bit, even though there are folks in Iowa that have done a lot of work on that. I'm going to talk a little about some of our work on nutrient management, cover crops, and drainage water management for reducing N loss in Iowa, and acknowledge co-authors Linda Schott, Emily Waring, Christina Kraft, that are graduate students, Ines, that's a postdoc, and Carl Peterson that makes all the field work happen with our crew. I'm going to talk about research at two sites, our Gilmore City Drainage Research Facility that was established in 1988, was ready for monitoring in 89, and there was a drought. So, and then 1990, there was a lot of flow. So if I come to put a drainage site in, the first year may be a drought. But that's been in for 20 years. Our SURF site, Southeast Research Farm Drainage, that's our drainage water management site. That went in 06. The Northwest Research Farm is our newest site in kind of our five that we have around the state. We're working on some timing of nitrogen application there under for our research fund project. Northeast Research Farm, also going on since the late 80s, looking now at liquid swine manure and cover crops at that site. And then our comparison of biofuel systems that, if you were in the session this morning, Renee Dietzel talked about some of the drainage monitoring work that has taken place there with different cropping systems, particularly corn, soybean, and then prairie systems. All of these sites except for the SURF site are set up in a similar fashion. Each of the sites has different size plots, but at our Gilmore City site, 50-foot wide, 125-foot long. We monitor a center tile line coming out of each of those plots. There's a border tile on the edge of the plot to try to isolate flow from one plot to the next. And then that center tile line dumps into a sump that's pumped out, and we can record the volume of water that's pumped out. And then there is a orifice in that pipe. So the back pressure in there forces a small portion of all the water flow into our water sample container, and then we can go out multiple times a week to collect water samples. So we're able to monitor how much flow is coming from each of the plots and collect a flow proportional water sample so we can make a good estimate of how many pounds of nitrate or phosphorus may have come out of each of those plots. I will take no credit for that. That was long before I started at Iowa State that they came up with this, but it's worked fairly well as long as you don't flood out the sumps and blow the GFIs for the electricity. So, you know, if you don't do that, you're okay. And you can see what it looks like going down in there. So on the left there, you can see the flow meters. You can see the pipe or the tubing going over to the sample collection bottles. A lot of PVC tubing in there, but because of the tubing, there are some we don't monitor it during the heavy freezing conditions, although from time to time we have heated the sumps or put heat tape on them to see how much water was coming out, and in general it was a very small amount of the annual water budget. So probably, you know, less than an inch of drainage during that say 1st of December to middle of March period. If we look at from the times when we're looking at drainage, I think it's important to think about when do we get drainage in some of our different tile drained regions. In Iowa, April, May, and June are our big months. If we look at combining April, May, and June, that's about 70 to 75% of our annual drainage occurs in those months. So if we're going to have practices, we need to have practices that are effective during those time periods. I think this is also the importance of long-term data, because it's not just 1 year or 2 years, but you know, over 20 years we have that information. And as we think about this, you know, this we'll get to the nutrient management cover crops, but as we think about this, it's important to recognize the major driver or a major driver of that weather. So this is following through. This is too many lines for a single graph, but I do think it's important that the green line is the annual drainage over from 1990 to 2014. The blue line is the flow-weighted annual nitrate concentration. where we had a, for a corn soybean rotation, where we had applied 150 to 160 pounds of nitrogen per acre to the corn crop. And then the red or orange line there is the nitrate loss. And we see that nitrate loss, you know, closely correlated with how much drainage we got in an individual year. But even that blue line, the flow-weighted annual nitrate at the same nitrogen application rate, you know, we can see a low in 1993 when we probably flushed that system out of an annual nitrate concentration of about 7 to 8 parts per million versus 2013 over 23, 24 parts per million. You know, that 2013, the year after the drought. So this is the challenge for farmers. How do they manage, if we were to say, you know, have the nitrate at the drinking water standard coming out from their tile line, you know, how do we manage just for that? Because 150 to 160 pounds to corn following beans would be, it's at the upper end of the maximum return to nitrogen value, but not that far out of line with what we would expect. Okay, so since 06, we've been looking at fall applied, in this case, aqua ammonia versus an early season side dress of aqua ammonia to the corn crop. From 06 to 09, we were applying 140 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. 2011 to 2014, 168 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. If we look at the top graph there is the corn year, so the corn side of the phase, the bottom is the soybean side of the phase. And what we see is in some years, we certainly see higher nitrate concentrations where we had applied that fertilizer the fall before. But conversely, for the soybean side, then we see some higher nitrogen concentrations where that fertilizer had been applied the prior spring before the corn crop. Okay, so if we look at that and combine those two, the corn year and the soybean year, or the corn and the soybean phase, what we see is very little impact, no statistically significant differences, at least at this site, between fall nitrogen to corn versus spring nitrogen to corn, which is not what we would intuitively expect, but within our systems, that's what we've seen. Now, this is at the same nitrogen application rate in the fall as in the spring. You know, a producer may put more on in the fall than in the spring, but that may be more of a rate effect than just strictly a timing effect. We're likely to continue studying this over more years, but we do think at least these 8 years give us some indication that while reducing the risk of nitrate loss when we put it on in the spring, we're probably limited in what we can get with just timing of nitrogen application. Similar to Kelly, we've looked at the last 4 years and 2015 we don't have summarized yet, but we've tried to look at some different nitrogen products. So here we had urea, the polymer coated urea, and aqua ammonia. And you can see the corn year and the soybean year. And there are certain years where we see some reduction in nitrate concentration with that polymer coated urea. I think this is something, again, that we want to look at into the future. But as we look at that 4-year average, we do see some reduction, although not statistically significant. Here we are. Okay, so here's, if we average again over that corn side, the corn phase and the soybean phase, the average of that phase, you can see here in 2014, we see a statistically significant reduction with that poly-coated urea versus the traditional urea product. As we look at the 4-year average, no statistically significant difference, but on an absolute basis, maybe something, some potential there to look at. And again, we'll see what 2015, we'll have a fifth year of data to this data set that we'll be able to include. Okay. Cover crops, winter cereal rye cover crops are a practice that's gaining a lot of interest throughout Iowa. What we're doing at this site is we are going in after harvest and drilling in the winter cereal rye. So we're drilling it in after harvest. So in a lot of years, it's the middle to the latter part of October that we're getting this drilled just because of the cash crop harvest. And again, this is in north central Iowa, about 80 miles north of Ames, 80 miles north and west of Ames, so along Highway 3, so kind of midway between I-80 and the Minnesota border. So for those that are familiar with Iowa, because this is an area we hear people can't grow cover crops because it's too cold. We're able to get some cover crop growth, not as much as we do in Ames, though. So if we look at this from 2006 to 2014, you can see the average there on the right between the corn and then corn after rye, soybean after rye. So in all those cases where we have that rye, we see a reduction compared to the corn or the soybean without rye. But on average or total, I guess, we see about a 25% reduction with that winter, and I shouldn't say annual rye crop. Winter cereal rye cover crop. If we look at data near Ames that Dan Janes and Tom Casper have collected, they're probably closer to a 50 to 60% reduction in nitrate concentration when they use a winter cereal rye cover crop. So I think a big factor is, and we've been looking at this with our corn cap project, how do we maximize cover crop growth? I think that's going to be very critical for the uptake of that nitrate and the nitrate reduction. And so from in the future, we're going to be going to interseeding or overseeding rye on these plots in early September to try to enhance the growth of that cover crop, specifically in the fall. But if we can get more rye established, more root system, maybe it'll come back a little bit more vigorously in the spring as well. But certainly some potential, a lot of work yet to be done on how do we optimize, maximize the cover crop growth within the cover crop growth window period. We don't want to have the growth get out of control and negatively impact corn production, so we need to get the maximum amount of growth or optimize the growth during that window. Okay, our SURF site, the Iowa State Southeast Research and Demonstration Farm, we have our drainage water management down at that site. So we have 8 plots down there, only 2 replicates, but we have 2 undrained plots. We have 2 plots or 2 treatments that are 1.2 meter tile depth with an 18 meter spacing. One of those is controlled drainage and one of them is conventional drained. And then the one in blue there are our shallow drainage systems. So in this case, instead of putting the drains at 1.2 meter depth, which would be a common depth in Iowa, we're putting them in shallower at 0.75 meters and closer together to try to maintain the same drainage intensity or drainage rate from those plots. So 12 meters as opposed to 18 meters, or 40 feet as opposed to 60 feet. Okay, we've been monitoring here since 2007. The first 4 years were wetter than normal, so on average, kind of the growing season precipitation is about 750 millimeters. You can see the years there in blue, 07 to 2010, wetter than that. Then we had a couple dry years, 2011 and 2012, and then we had a couple fairly normal years in 2013 and 2014. This is from this year, just to kind of illustrate maybe the benefits of drainage. You can see Linda Schott here is in one of our undrained plots on the left, controlled drainage, shallow and conventional. At least at that point in time, we see a growth difference of the conventional drainage versus either of the other drainage treatments. Okay, if we look at the drainage volume coming out the drain, we see a reduction in how much water comes out the drain line where we have the controlled or the shallow drainage treatments, 40 to 50% reduction. It's certainly a question, where does the rest of that water go? Without a doubt, as Dr. David talked about, but if what we're measuring just coming out of that drain line, we do see a reduction. We see about a similar reduction if we look at the nitrate load coming out that drain line. So here's 07 to 2014, and on average there, again, we're seeing a statistically significant decrease with controlled or shallow drainage. of about 40 to 50% reduction in nitrate export out that drain line. One of the things on these plots, we've tried to isolate the inner part of the plot for monitoring, and there are border tiles, and on the control drainage plots, there are control structures on those border tiles as well. But undoubtedly, we do have some lateral flow from those systems. Okay, so if we look at in Iowa, kind of in summary, on average, that majority of the nitrate drainage and nitrate loss occurs in that April to June period. From our data in north central Iowa, that timing of nitrogen application had little impact on nitrate end concentrations. In north central Iowa, that winter cereal rye cover crop, from our data, reduced nitrate concentration and subsurface drainage by about 25%. And do think that drainage water management through controlled and shallow drainage shows some potential to reduce nitrate loss from our for drainage systems, but is something that warrants additional studies, especially looking at where does that reduction in water go. Acknowledge the funding support that we've gotten for this project. The Gilmore City site throughout the 25 years has primarily been supported by the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship through the Ag Water Management Fund. So actually it's funded from the sale of ag chemicals and fertilizers in the state. And then more recently, part of the work at Gilmore City and the work at SURF has been funded by the USDA Sustainable Corn Project. So with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
I think we have time for one question.
Okay.
Yeah. So what's your recommended practice to Iowa farmer? Let's say, you know, they got to eat, right? All together. What's your recommended package to the local farmer so that they can adopt?
What's the recommended package to the local farmer? Okay, I'm from the university, so I'll probably say it depends, but it does. So I would want to know what they're doing. If I'm looking at nitrogen management, first I'd want to look at what's their nitrogen application rate. You know, because we certainly, on average, we estimate the nitrogen application rate in Iowa to corn following beans is a little over 150. But that means some are probably at, and I know there are, we've surveyed some, at 200 in corn following beans. I'd work with those folks, or if that was a producer I'd work with, let's get that down, because that's the practice that can probably, you know, if we can reduce that from 200 to say 150, we may not see any or very little difference in their yield, but their bottom line is going to be better, right? Because they aren't putting, you know, they're maximizing their profit, not maximizing their yield is what, you know, what we want to do. Then beyond that, you know, could they implement a cover crop? And then I think we want to start, you know, are there other tweaks to the nitrogen management, or do we go to some of the edge of field practices, a bioreactor, or we've had a little better social acceptance of wetlands, probably because it's been incentivized enough to make people interested in it. But, you know, if they have a location that's suitable for a wetland, and maybe they aren't attached to that land or are willing to utilize that for another purpose, that may work. So I think it's a tough question to say, you know, what one thing, but I think we have a suite of tools that we could use but it takes people, it takes technical support to work with those individual farmers, you know, and everybody does want an easy answer, but it needs a lot of technical assistance, and sometimes that's not where we see the resources invested. We see it in practices, but then how do we get those practices on the land? We need the technical resources.
Very good. Thank you very much. Yep.